And another hearty welcome to your weekly radio magazine, Why So Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Coming up on today's program, Why So Curious takes on fluctuating gas prices, a very timely story in light of Hurricane Harvey. We'll also have a guest joining us in studio to tell us about this year's Free to Breathe 5K Run Walk coming up in just a few weeks. And we've got more music, a preview of the Why So Community Concert coming up on September 10th. Up first. In the wake of Hurricane Harvey, state officials are cautioning Ohioans looking to help flood victims to watch out for charity scams. The warning comes from the Ohio Attorney General's office. And for the local perspective, we spoke with John North, president and CEO of the Dayton chapter of the Better Business Bureau.
Yeah, with everything that we're seeing on television with Hurricane Harvey and the devastation, we haven't seen this kind of devastation in many, many years. And so the Better Business Bureau and also our BBV Wise Giving Alliance does have some tips as Americans always step up to the plate when things like this happen here locally or far as well. And so as you begin to open up your wallets and want to try and make a difference, first thing that we recommend is really make sure you're dealing with a trustworthy organization. You can go to give.org, that's G-I-V-E.org, and you can look up a charity across the United States and you can see how they measure up against our 20 standards of trust. Also, you want to see if the charity has an on-ground presence in the impacted areas. Unless the charity already has staff there in the affected areas, it's going to be difficult for new aid workers to try and get in there and assist quickly. Of course, we know the organizations like American Red Cross. Our local chapter here has already sent an individual down there to provide some assistance. And places like the Salvation Army as well are already boots on the ground, ready to go, and already have a presence in that area.
John, you mentioned the BBB standards for charitable accountability, and it seems like folks are just constantly coming up with ways to try and scam the average citizen. So can you tell me a little bit about the process of making those organizations accountable or how you go about judging that?
Yeah, there are a lot of organizations, especially during times like this, and we can't even call them organizations, that set up phony names. So scam artists set up something that sounds a lot like a legitimate charitable organization that you might be familiar with, like the American Red Cross, could be the United States Cross, or something similar sounding to the United Way. So your BBB actually has 20 standards of trust that we hold charities all across North America accountable for. Within those 20 standards, we have areas such as we look at their board governance. There's a minimum number of required board members to have, and that's five. They have to have at least five board members. They have to also make sure that they're meeting a certain amount of times every year, and the minimum amount of times that they should be meeting is four. There's financial oversight. There's how they spend their money is a majority of the percentage, and that percentage says that they can't spend over 35% on management in general kinds of functions, fundraising kinds of functions. The majority of those funds have to go directly to programming. And they have to measure their effectiveness and the effectiveness of the CEO at least on a every other year basis.
Is this something that you work with the Ohio Attorney General's office on in combining these lists?
Actually, we work very closely with the Ohio Attorney General on a number of things. We actually have a contract, a memorandum of understanding with the Ohio Attorney General to share information. Usually it's related to businesses in the area and their business practices. Not often do we get in trouble with legitimate charities that we have in our database, but when there is a scam going on, and there are problems with an organization posing to be a charity, and when it's impacted people here in our area or anywhere across the state of Ohio, we will get the Ohio Attorney General's office involved in that process.
And your organization has also issued some precautions when dealing with in-kind donations and crowdfunding. Can we talk about those issues?
Yeah, when it comes to in-kind donations, you know, there are three phases of a disaster like this. The first is going to be recovery. And so you're there and people are release is the first. So relief, trying to get emergency aid in there, trying to help people as they can. And then the second is relief. And so that's getting what they need, getting housing set up, making emergency repairs where they can, getting an emergency shelter, and then recovery. And recovery is really the phase that those kinds of items donated are going to be good for. The best way to get things into the hands as quickly as possible is through those relief efforts and by donating dollars or donating your time. If you're available to volunteer for the American Red Cross or some of the other groups that have a presence there, that's the best way to get immediate attention and your resources down there. Also, as far as crowdfunding, there are a lot of crowdfunding sites. The issue that we have with it is that there's not an extensive amount of vetting that's going on with those crowdfunding sites. And so there may be individuals with the best of intentions setting up these crowdfunding sites, but there is no guarantee that that money is going to go to the disaster relief efforts that you want those funds to go to. The best time to use a crowdfunding site is when you're familiar with the organization or the individual that is being impacted by the crowdfunding, or you know a family member who has direct experience. It's an easy way to give. But then on the other hand, if you know of the individual, you know, you can always give money directly to them for assistance.
Does the Bureau offer advice for people being prepared for disasters in their own area?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing is after the disaster happens. You know, we have all the warnings that we can. We've experienced it, you know, about 10 years ago with Ike, when the remnants of Ike came through here. You know, be as prepared as you can, you know, stock up on all emergency supplies. But the biggest thing that we can do is afterwards, because what we see is a lot of storm chasers come into our area. And so when those storm chasers come in, oftentimes what we see is that they come in, they make a quick buck, and then they leave. Oftentimes they subcontract out some of the work. And then what happens when there's a problem later? And oftentimes we found with these storm chasers is that there is shoddy work. There are problems that come and happen later. And then many of the consumers have to spend more money to get a legitimate organization to come in, fix what should have been done right the first time.
You've also got a list of charities that are completely accredited by the Business Bureau.
That's right. You can go to bv.org/Dayton, and you can look up charities, and then you'll have a list, and we have over 500 here in our database for the Miami Valley alone.
John, that's all I had for you, but anything else to add?
No, I think you're good. Just be careful with your dollars. Americans have big hearts, and when they open up their wallets, they want to make sure that their dollars are going to the right recovery efforts and that those dollars are in their right hands.
John North is president and CEO of the Dayton chapter of the Better Business Bureau. John, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Jay. Take care.
On Saturday, September 16th, Miami Valley residents will once again take part in Dayton's Free to Breathe annual 5K run walk to support lung cancer research. The event moves to a new venue this year and will be held at the Dayton Raceway at Hollywood Gaming. Kathleen Fennig is herself a lung cancer survivor. In this interview, she says her involvement with Free to Breathe is a direct result of her diagnosis.
My journey as a cancer survivor actually started in July of 2010. I had an elderly non-smoking cousin that was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And after he died, he only survived until November of that same year. And after he died, I got to thinking that he was a never smoker. And unfortunately, I did have a history of smoking in my lifetime. I smoked for probably about 30 years off and on. So I thought, well, you know, if I had a relative, a close relative like that had lung cancer, perhaps there's something in our family, and it might be a good idea if I got screened. So in December of 2011, I requested a CT scan, and I was originally denied that that CT scan because I did not have symptoms. They did do a chest X-ray, and on the chest X-ray, they did see a shadow that they felt needed to be investigated. They then did order a CT scan, and on that CT scan, they saw two small nodules. They were both on my right lung, and they ordered a rescan in 3 months. In 3 months, the one nodule grew, and one of them remained the same. So at that point, I was eligible for a biopsy and also a PET scan, and I was diagnosed with adenocarcinoma, stage one. They felt was stage one at the time. And in April of that year, I had surgery. I had my right upper lobe removed. And in July, after my discharge from the hospital, I kind of went home and I sat on the couch and I was kind of waiting to die. I had so many regrets, one of which was, of course, smoking. And another one was I loved living and I didn't want my life to be over. So at the end of August, I decided that I needed to get on with living my life. And I started volunteering for various agencies. I felt like maybe if I volunteered, maybe God would keep me alive because I could validate my life or validate my being. So I started volunteering for Free to Breathe, and I went to my first walk in November of 2011. I was so, so disappointed in the number of people that were there and also the low number of survivors. And that was when I decided I needed to do something about this. This just wasn't right. Smoking or non-smoking, there are lots of people that get lung cancer and they don't smoke. And even if you did smoke, that doesn't mean that you don't deserve a cure. So I started advocating for increased research dollars to find better treatment options and eventually a cure for lung cancer. Lung cancer kills more people in the United States than breast, colon, and prostate cancer combined. And more than 1 in 3 Americans are going to be affected by lung cancer in some way.
Annually, more than 220,000 a year.
220,000 people. It's the equivalent of a jumbo jet falling from the sky every day. Hmm. About 440 people every day in the U.S. die from lung cancer. And the 5-year survival rate is 17%. In 1960, when President Nixon declared war on cancer, the survival rate for lung cancer was 16%. So we're now at 17%, and it's over 50 years later.
Well, we last spoke 4 or 5 years ago, and we're very pleased to have you back with us. Let's talk about this year's event, the Dayton Free to Breathe 5K Run Walk, which will take place on Saturday, September 16th at the Dayton Raceway. That's a new location for this event.
That is a new location. It is a new location. It's kind of a different type of venue. In the past, we either had it in a neighborhood or we had it at Fifth Third Field. But I got a phone call this year from the manager at the Dayton Raceway who had a grandmother who had passed away from lung cancer. And he would go to Philadelphia every year to the Free to Breathe there. And he thought, well, you know what? Why don't I host it this year? And at first I was a little reluctant about it. But when I went out and saw their venue and they were essentially opening their doors to us and offering us an awful lot of things that we could offer our participants in a different way. So I thought, you know what, why not try it? So this year we're having it at the Dayton Raceway and Hollywood Gaming. However, it is in the Raceway area, which is family friendly. So you don't have to worry about not bringing your children.
Okay.
It is a family-friendly environment, and I think you'll find that the venue is going to be kind of a fun atmosphere. They're providing refreshments after the event, and for all the adults that are over 21, you'll get a $10 voucher to take into the casino, and they're offering refreshments as well. So, and we're also having a silent auction. We have a lot of items, really nice items, that I've gathered through the community to auction off, and we'll be doing that day as well.
Since 2005, the organization Free to Breathe has raised more than $16 million, correct?
$16 million.
And last year, roughly
$30,000? $30,000 at our Dayton event, and we would like to grow that this year.
Let's talk about how people can get involved and kind of how this is set up.
Okay, well, you can register at freetobreathe.org/Dayton, and you can either create your own team or you can join a team. My team is Viva La Vida, Live the Life, and that's what I have been doing since my diagnosis. But you can create your own team or you can join anyone else's team or you can come independently. We welcome any and all people that want to participate in our event.
Kathleen, you are a nurse.
Yes.
Many years in the medical field. Do you think medically we're on track to overtake this someday?
I think that we're very, very close to finding a cure for and better treatment options for cancers. Cancer, different types of cancers are totally different diseases. There's not going to be one cure for all cancers. Mm. We have so many targeted therapies now and so many immunotherapies and stem cell research. There are so many great, great, groundbreaking research going on right now, and that's what the money from Free to Breathe does. It funds research, groundbreaking research that has brought us this far. So I only see things getting better.
Again, it's the Dayton Free to Breathe 5K Run Walk, which will take place Saturday, September 16th at the Dayton Raceway at Hollywood Gaming. And again, that is on the racetrack. If you want more details, you can visit them at freetobreathe.org/Dayton. Kathleen, thanks so much for your time.
Jerry, thank you so much. And you know, your radio station's always been so supportive of us. We really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. Americans are expected to use a record 9.5 million barrels of gasoline per day this summer, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. And WYSO listener Chris Longo was wondering why gas prices fluctuate so much. WYSO Curious intern Liam Niemeyer investigates.
Finding the best gas prices can be a crapshoot for most people. Prices can fluctuate from hour to hour. Jeff Leonard, spokesman for the National Association of Convenience Stores, knows how a sudden spike in gas prices can get people angry.
There's an emotional connection to gas that doesn't exist for other products. You see the prices driving by 45 miles an hour. It connects to you a little bit more directly than a gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, things like that.
But ultimately, Leonard says gas station owners don't really have that much control over the price.
Gas prices fluctuate because they're tied to commodities. They're tied to oil prices. And oil prices go up and down by the minute, just like stocks do. So it's one of the few products that is very, very closely tied to what's happening on the commodities markets.
Crude oil is processed at refineries to make gasoline. And it's cheap because there's a lot of it in the world right now. Tom Kloza with the Oil Price Information Service says we can thank U.S. fracking for that.
Oil shale is a big game changer. And as recently as the Arab Spring back in 2011, there was very little oil coming from U.S. shale. And that's changed dramatically and will continue to change dramatically.
While there's a glut of crude oil right now, Kloza says gas prices could still spike. Because gasoline is perishable, one natural disaster could wreak havoc on gas prices.
But when you have problems with refineries going down because of hurricane threats or hurricane impacts or fires or, you know, events, then just-in-time can become just-intolerable and you can see very brief gasoline price spikes.
In downtown Yellow Springs, a price bump can make or break the bank for Nipper's Corner, a locally owned independent gas station.
You want me to fill it up all the way? Okay.
We've gone through some good times and bad times. A lot more bad times than good times. That's what I just need to say.
Ben Vosdale runs Nipper's Corner with his in-laws, Jane and Dennis Nipper. Whenever he needs gas, he calls Hartley Oil Company in Washington Courthouse. They sell to him usually 20 cents per gallon lower than what's advertised to the consumer, what's known as the rack price. Add taxes and a small markup onto that initial price, and you get the gas prices everyone sees posted on the road. But usually gas station owners like Vosdale only make a cent or two of profit off of each gallon.
If someone's telling you that they make tons of profit off gas, then they're lying to you. You know, I'm going to just, you know, make it simple. If I have a major breakdown on one of my pumps and someone had to come out and fix it, we'll probably lost money for the month.
The real money is in the chips, drinks, and alcohol in the store. Jane Nipper helps inside the convenience store.
There is competition, and Speedway being one of the largest competitors, if not our largest competitor, we can't compete with just like, let's say, candy bars. They get specials on their candy bars. We can't buy a lot in volume.
Speedway, owned by Marathon Gas, has numerous gas stations across multiple states. Speedway buys their gas, food, and alcohol in bulk, which means they can beat Nipper's Corner on price in many cases. So Nipper's Corner has to find other ways to survive. Being a big part of the community is the heart of what keeps Nipper's Corner going. Dennis Nipper, the person who the gas station is named after, lays out a red lawn chair in front of the store just to say hi to community members that pass by.
I sit right here and in a chair with a Coke or a Pepsi or, and just watch the world.
For WYSO, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
Why So Curious is sponsored by Proto Build Bar, proud supporter of Curious Minds. Support for Why So Weekend on this public radio station comes from Current Cuisine of Yellow Springs. With over 30 years' experience in catering, the team at Current Cuisine provides custom catering for events serving 25 to 300 guests, working closely with clients at every step of the process, from vision to execution. More at currentcuisine.com. We are just a week away from the WISO Community Concert. It's coming up September 10th at Riverscape Metro Park. This year, the event features music from the Claudettes, Zane and the Sway, and the Almighty Get Down. We'll wrap up today's WISO Weekend with a tune from the Claudettes. WISO Music Director Nikki Dakota calls this track her all-time favorite. It's called Tide Pool. Music from the Claudettes, just one of our guests at the WISO Community Concert taking place on September 10th at Riverscape Metro Park. We'll preview some more music next week on WISO Weekend, and we'll try to get Nikki Dakota in here to help me encourage you to come out and have a good time with us. You can get more details on the concert at our website, wiso.org.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Wells Almanac for the fifth week of late summer, the second week of the cricket and the katydid moon. In this fifth week of late summer, the final tier of wildflowers starts to open. White and violet asters, orange beggar ticks, burr marigolds, tall goldenrod, zigzag goldenrod, and Japanese knotweed all come into bloom, blending with the brightest of the purple ironweed and the yellow sundrops and the blue chicory and the golden touch-me-nots and showy coneflowers and great lulabelia. Deep in the woods, the late wildflowers of this year coincide with the first growth of second spring, actually the first days of next spring. March's henbit comes up in the garden and wood mint puts out new stalks. Watercress revives in the sloughs. Next May's sweet rockets and next July's avens send up fresh basil leaves. Scattered violets flower and sweet Sicily sends out its foliage again. Sedum reappears, lanky from its canopied summer. On the farm, pickle season is usually over and peaches can be done for the year. Grapes are about to come in and elderberries are deep purple and sweet for picking. Nearly half of the tobacco has usually been cut, half of the commercial tomatoes have been picked, and about a fourth of the potatoes dug. Hickory nutting season opens as sweet corn time winds down. Burrs from the tick trefoil stick to your stockings when you wander off the trails. Lizard's tail drops its leaves into the creeks and sloughs. Beside the deer paths of the forest, the undergrowth is tattered and cluttered with the remnants of the year. The last fireflies are flickering. Red-headed woodpeckers, red-winged blackbirds, house wrens, scarlet tanagers, indigo buntings, eastern bluebirds, and black ducks are migrating. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the first week of early fall. In the meantime, look for the signs of second spring, prophecy of the year ahead.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at wiso.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.